since we measure HRV at specific times, when our data is more constant, it simply means that we bounce back quickly. It does not mean that we are not facing stressors. You know, stress can be good, sometimes it's essential. So the point is not to avoid the stressors, but to put yourself in a state in which you bounce back very quickly.
Welcome to Longevity by Design, a podcast designed to give individuals access to the leading scientific information in the field of longevity. The ability to add years to your life and life to your years needs no opinion. Join us as we ask science to take the wheel. In each episode, Dr. Gil Blander joins a co-host and an industry expert in the field of longevity, shining a light and getting the answers to the key question, how can we live a longer, healthier life?
Hello, I'm Dr. Gil Blander. Welcome to Longevity by Design, how to live a longer, healthier life. We are produced by Insight Tracker, your science-based guide to optimizing your body from the inside out. Our guest today is Dr. Marco Altini. Dr. Marco Altini is a scientist and developer with a PhD in data science and a master's degree in computer science, engineering, and human movement science. Dr. Altini is the founder of HRV4 Training, which is the first validated app able to measure heart rate and heart rate variability in order to gain actionable insight into the user's stress and training. Dr. Altini is also a data scientist at Oura Ring and a guest lecturer. He has 10 plus years of experience modeling physiological data and has over 50 publications with a focus on intersection between technology, health, and performance. Welcome, Marco.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
No, it's a pleasure. And we were thinking about you for a long time, and it is a pleasure for us to have you. So we usually start the discussion with asking a basic question about why have you decided to become a scientist and when was it?
Well, I would say I didn't have any plan to become a scientist. It just happened that I had studied computer science and did not find any of the maybe traditional coursework particularly interesting or engaging until I had the opportunity to spend some time working on what was called at that time embedded systems, which was basically sensors, what we call wearables today. The first prototypes maybe in, 2008 or something like that, that we're trying to capture signals from the body. And then as computer scientists, we would program these sensors and read the data and try to make sense of the data. And that's when something clicked probably in terms of using the skills I had in the context of something I was really fascinated by, which is capturing signals from the body and especially in relation to stress or exercise or sorts of things that we face, to see what is the response of the body and how we can analyze and interpret that data, which led then to the following 10, 15 years of studying and working on these topics.
Excellent. And we know, you develop labs related to HRV. Can you give us a bit of an overview about those apps? And is there any one of them that you recommend the most?
For sure. So back about 10 years ago, I developed this method to basically capture heart rate and heart rate variability using the phone camera so that you don't need any sense. This is the technology that we have in HRV for Training, which is our main app and the one that normally I would recommend using if you're starting to look into this kind of things, because it helps you establish a morning routine for this kind of measurement, which is very important to acquire data in a clear context that you can repeat every day. And then it helps you interpreting the data and capturing basically how your body is responding to the various stressors you face, which could be, you know, related to training, but not necessarily. I'd say we'll talk more about this later, but HRV is just a marker of stress. So regardless of your interest in training, if you want to see your body's response to different stressors, this is, I think, a useful tool in that context.
Excellent. And speaking about HRV, I'm sure that most of our audience know what is HRV, but for the minority that doesn't know, can you explain what is heart rate variability or HRV? And what is it measuring in the body? Why is it so in fashion right now?
So So technically, what we measure is the variation between heartbeats. The heart does not beat constantly. There is always some variation, and we quantify that over a certain period of time, a minute or a few minutes. Now, we care about measuring these differences between consecutive beats because they are not random. They are not due to chance, but they are due to how the body is responding to stress. And in particular, when we face a stressor, we have a response from the autonomic nervous system. And the autonomic nervous system, in turn, modulates heart rhythm so that when we face a stressor, our autonomic nervous system, and in particular, the parasympathetic branch, the one in charge of rest and recovery, for example, is suppressed. And this suppression has an impact on heart rhythm, meaning that our heart rhythm becomes more constant and our heart rate becomes a little higher. I think everybody's more used to this, at least to know that when they're stressed, under high pressure or any other sort of situation in which stress is important, you know that your heart rate maybe is a bit elevated. And together with that, your HRV is typically very suppressed. So your heart rate becomes more constant. On the other end, the opposite happens when you do not face a stressor, when you're more relaxed or in a situation in which your body has responded well to previous stressors, then you have the opposite behavior. So the autonomic nervous system will modulate heart rhythm in a way that this variability between consecutive beats increases. So when we go and measure HRV, we do that as it is an indirect way to capture the body's response to stressors and the autonomic nervous system response, because we cannot measure directly the autonomic nervous system. So heart rate variability is our best non-invasive proxy to that kind of response.
Thank you for that. And a lot of time people are confused between resting heart rate and the HRV. So can you give us a synopsis of what is similar between them and what is the difference between those two physiological markers?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's important to stress this because capturing HRV is more complicated. So if we go through the trouble of doing that, we should make sure that it is worth it, right? That we don't have that information already just by looking at heart rate. So the difference, typically, when we look at the stress response, is that HRV is more sensitive to stress response. So the modulation of the autonomic nervous system will also change heart rate. So if parasympathetic activity is higher, heart rate is also a bit reduced. But the impact on HRV, so on the beat-to-beat variation, is higher. So in simpler terms, if we look at how much our HRV changes, for example, in response to training, we have that degree of change is much larger than the change in heart rate. So if the change in heart rate is about 1%, maybe the change in HRV is 5-10%. So it becomes more sensitive to stressor, and that allows us to better understand what is happening, because the change in heart rate often is so small that then it could be just normal day-to-day variability or noise. It is difficult to see if it was directly linked to the stressor, especially for normal day-to-day stressors or for any sort of psychological stressor, stressors that do not have that very large impact on the body, like you could think of things like sickness or large alcohol intake. Those kind of things would change your heart rate dramatically as well. So HRV is not necessarily something you want to look at because you already know that the change is very obvious in heart rate data. But for more subtle stressors, day-to-day changes, HRV becomes more sensitive, and that allows us to better understand what is happening in response to all these stressors.
So is it fair to give the analogy that HRV is more like glucose or fasting glucose, that changing can change very fast between day to day, and HRV, and the resting heart rate is more like A1C that show you maybe the average of the last 90 days. Is it a good analogy or is it a bad analogy?
Well, you're pushing it a bit, but okay. I understand your point. But I would say that both resting heart rate and HRV change more dynamically, more like glucose. But yes, HRV changes much more dynamically, like when you look at glucose continuously, and you will see continuous changes in response to both stress and food and activity. You can think of that also in terms of how the autonomic system is regulating all of these parameters together. Typically, there's a strong link also between glucose and HRV itself. And heart rate also will change, but to a lesser degree.
Cool. That's good to know. And talking about HRV, so what is the way to measure it? What is the best time to measure it? And how do you measure it?
So there are a few ways to measure in terms of the technology. And there are also a few ways in terms of measuring timing. Starting with timing, because this is one of the probably most important aspects. If we want to capture our body's physiological stress level and response to the most important stressors in our lives, we have only two choices to do this right. And these are, we measure throughout the night with a device like a wearable sensor that is measuring as we sleep, or we measure first thing in the morning. If we measure outside of these times, then we are capturing typically transitory stressors, things that, you know, like eating or having coffee or just having a conversation or socializing or moving around, any sort of things will have an impact on your heart rate and HRV and autonomic nervous system activity. But it does not mean that we care about that response because it's gone in a few minutes. And sometimes the interpretation would also be incorrect if we think about typically a lower HRV is interpreted negatively. But if we are exercising, we know that there is a positive health benefit to doing that. So it is better to measure in a known condition during sleep or first thing in the morning so that we capture the body's response to what we have done instead of measuring continuously or acutely or at the wrong times. So it's important to establish this morning routine for a measurement, like with an app like ours or others, or to use a wearable sensor that provides you with the full night of day. It's important not to use something that measures just a few minutes here and there during the night. Even if we are asleep and unconscious, there are a lot of things happening at the level of the autonomic nervous system. For example, just because of different sleep stages and the circadian rhythm, we have that there is very high variability in HRV on a minute-by-minute basis. So if you capture only a few minutes here and there, then the data will not be representative of your physiological stress level, but it will be representative of maybe that specific sleep stage similarly to measuring at a random time during the day. So device that measures the entire night or a morning measurement as soon as you wake up, those are the ideal moments. The two data points provide data that is also very highly correlated. So that means that you can capture the same responses basically when you do it one way or the other. There are some differences, but I think that's a bit more nuanced related to the fact that one simply comes earlier and the other later. So if you exercise in the evening, your night HRV might be a little more suppressed just because it takes some time to renormalize. And in the morning, it might be back to normal. But otherwise, overall, both within individual and between individuals, you have that the data is very similar between these two data points, which are reliable ways to capture your resting physiology. Then once you basically decided when you want to do it, depending on if you prefer to wear a sensor, if you prefer to using an app in the morning, you have different technologies that you can use. So in the older days, it was basically all about just using ECG or a chest strap and measuring in the morning. Now we have different wearables that measure using PPG, so optical technology. You have, you know, Oura rings, whoops, all sorts of things. And all these sensors are pretty accurate at this point in computing HRV, and they give you the average of the night. So you can use that as a good estimate of your baseline physiological stress level. Those sensors, again, are also pretty good. There have been different validations with reference ECGs, electrocardiography, the electrical activity of the heart, and then sensors like rings and bands and the phone camera that is what we use as well, all of them showing that they are comparable. So you can use any of these systems, even though there might be some small differences in absolute values, this becomes irrelevant as you measure, because you always measure with the same system. And what matters really here is relative changes, how things change for you over time in response to stress. And therefore, these different technologies are reliable and can be used for this type of measurements today.
So speaking about, you mentioned Oura and the Whoop. So I have Oura and it's only presenting my HRV during the night. As much as I know, and again, I don't have Whoop, but from doing a research, they are measuring HRV during the day as well. Is that correct or not?
No, at this stage, also during the night. And I think that's the way to go for these parameters, especially for optical sensors, because any sort of movement will disrupt the signal. Whoop has a mode in broadcasting where you could basically pair it to a third-party app and take a measurement. So you could use it if you are completely still also in that moment. But otherwise, they will also just measure during the night. And yeah, I think that's the way to go for this kind of signals. Otherwise, we are really looking at things we cannot interpret during the day.
Makes sense. So question for my curiosity, what is the highest HRV that can a person have?
That's a good question. I think in absolute terms, if we look at RMSSD, which is this feature that is the HRV number present in, I would say at this point, all apps and wearables are using this. In our studies in the lab, also with some top athletes and triathletes and people that tend to have particularly high HRV, I think we have seen higher than 200, maybe 230 milliseconds. I would say it's very unusual at the population level, but it's very unusual to see these values. But for young athletes, sometimes, yeah, they get to those values.
Wow. That makes me very jealous. I am far away from these 200.
Never look at absolute values. So never.
Okay. No, it's good to know. It's always good to know what you want to try for. But yeah, so it's interesting. Now, again, a bit more about that. So you said young athletes. So I assume that your athletic activity and how good you are as an athlete influence the level of your HRV. I assume that it's also related somehow to your age. So is there a correlation between age and the level and HRV of HRV?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's also one of the interesting aspects because it differs greatly from heart rate. So if we look at heart rate, we have a strong link between resting heart rate and physical activity level or fitness. So if you are fairly active and you exercise every day, your resting heart rate when you're 20 and when you're 60 can be exactly the same. This is not true for HRV. So for HRV, there is a dramatic change with age. That is the strongest parameter at the population level that drives changes. So if you are in your 60s, your HRV is likely to be maybe in the 20s or 30s or lower, because those are the typical values we see in the population, again, driven by age more than anything else, even if you exercise regularly. The differences between people that exercise regularly are almost non-existent, basically, at that point. So age has a much stronger impact, even though the resting heart rate is very different. So when you're younger, HRV tends to be much higher, and to an extent is also coupled to your physical activity level, right? So people that exercise more will tend to have a higher HRV. But I would say that resting heart rate remains a parameter that is more discriminative of physical activity and fitness level with respect to HRV, while HRV is more linked to maybe the aging process or deterioration of the autonomic nervous system and our capacity to self-regulate and everything that is associated to what is being measured when we look at HRV.
And do we know why HRV is declining so much in the aging process?
Yeah, I would say probably, well, we do not know exactly why, but I would say that likely it is due to this inability to maintain the autonomic nervous system activity and the whole balancing and homeostasis process in the same way that it was when we were younger. So basically, it's just facing the variation that acts aging that is captured indirectly, maybe by HRV as HRV reduces. Interestingly, not in agreement with the change in heart rate that we were seeing. So heart rate might always stay the same and you're always as fit and active, but obviously you're still aging and unable to do the same things you were doing before, and that might be better reflected in HRV.
And is there a peak somewhere, or a 1 year old should have the highest one and then the 100 years old should have the lowest? I assume that there was a peak in the 20s or something like that.
Yeah, no, I think your HRV tends to be higher still when you're younger. So maybe teenager age, or I'm not sure honestly about children. So in very early years of age, if it is even higher, because at that point heart rate is also a bit higher and there is always an inverse relationship there. So it could be that it does peak after a few years, but I'm not 100% sure, I have to say.
What about a gender, ethnicity? Is there any influence of that?
So not that I'm aware in terms of ethnicity, in terms of gender, there is a difference. Let's say that we have a very well established difference between men and women in resting heart rate. So resting heart rate is higher in women, likely also because the heart is smaller. So to maintain the same cardiac output, you need slightly higher heart rate. But in terms of HRV, there are a bit of inconsistencies in literature. It seems that there are some differences which might be associated also to the menstrual cycle. For example, after menopause, it seems that the differences disappear. So it is more similar between men and women. Before, there are some differences, but despite the higher resting heart rate that women have, it does seem like the HRV is also slightly higher, even though it is extremely similar between the two groups. So there's a very small difference and much smaller than when we look in the resting heart rate. And also some studies show the opposite. So I would say that overall, the evidence seems to be that it is extremely similar between the two. Where it changes a lot is at an individual level. So for a woman that has, or for a person that has a regular cycle, during the menstrual cycle, you see that there is a strong coupling often between the different phases of the cycle and HRV. So the fluctuations at the individual level will be associated to the menstrual cycle in a way that, for example, during the second phase of the cycle, the luteal phase, there is a typical suppression in HRV when also temperature is higher, resting heart rate is a bit higher. So those kind of changes have been documented multiple times and are quite clear, to the point that in some people, those changes drive much of the change also in resting HRV, which is, of course, different if you do not have a regular cycle.
Okay. So I have a question about the chicken and egg. So is the HRV is a predictive of longevity, or it's basically the effect of aging? What is your opinion about that?
Yeah, I think we definitely do not know. I do not think that a low HRV means that you're doomed. So I do not think that people that have a low HRV, yeah, will have a short life or anything like that. I think it is way more complex that we know and understand. There are only associations there, typically with lower values and maybe some negative health chronic conditions. But again, it's really chicken and egg. So what comes first is typically not known, because we don't have very good studies that look at these kind of things for long enough. And before you develop conditions, typically we just look with observational studies at groups that differ. And even when we look before and then we follow up people, the differences are extremely small. We are not able to separate these groups. Like if you attend the HRV of one person, it could be in any group, even if there is a statistically significant difference. Still, the overlap between this group is so large that you could be in any of the two, the ones that develop a condition or the healthy ones, with your HRV. It is really not predictive in that way, I believe, because there is so much overlap between people. There are genetic factors, there are behavioral factors that could drive or some very large changes in HRV over time. So the only evidence we have is these associations, and this makes it very interesting because clearly we know that it reduces a lot with aging in certain chronic conditions, but maybe it's just a result of many other processes that are going wrong before that.
What about resting heart rate? Is there a correlation between a lower resting heart rate and longevity?
Yeah, well, I think it's similar to HRV. We have the same associations, but in the opposite direction, right? So lower resting heart rate, having this strong relationship with physical activity level, is also a marker of that indirectly. So lower resting heart rate looks like it's going to be, you know, productive and provide insights into a longer life. But that is maybe because it is reflecting how you are more active or you have a certain lifestyle. So it does not mean that someone that maybe has a genetically low heart rate would be in the same position. I think we do not understand these kind of things in detail. So are you in a better place because your physiology has changed as a response of your lifestyle, or where you're born that way and, you know, your genes say that you have a higher HRV and low heart rate, even if you don't exercise and things like that. And does that make you likely to live longer or not? I don't think we have these answers.
And you mentioned a bit about things that modulate HRV, for example, menopause, definitely age. I'm talking, I would like to talk right now about a real intervention that you can have in order to increase HRV or a decrease resting heart rate. I assume that sleep is one of them, but I would love to hear from you. What is a positively improved dose variable? And if there is one that doing only for one, that will be even more interesting. And what is negatively affect HRV and resting heart rate?
Yeah. So at the individual level, I would say physical activity has been shown multiple times for sure to reduce resting heart rate and likely also to increase HRV. So being physically active has a strong impact on our physiology, which is reflected that way. I would say really the basics. So the others would be diet, limiting ultra processed foods, things like basic Mediterranean diet, you know, lots of the usual vegetables and non-processed foods and things like that seems to have a positive association. Sleep, always important. It does not mean that there is an optimal dose, as I think we know there is an optimal dose for you, but not probably at the genetic level of the population. So depending on whatever is required to you, but probably something we can figure out individually. It's important to try to address that needs, of course, because otherwise it's all stress that piles up and then eventually has a negative chronic impact that will result also in increased heart rate and suppressed HRV. I would say these are probably the main components, things that sink it, of course, any form of sickness, acute or chronic, in terms of behavioral aspects, cool intake. I would say moderate or high doses or in chronic doses has a strong negative impact on HRV and resting heart rate. Well, obviously, the other elements I already mentioned for the positive, it's the same here. So inactivity or a poor diet would have a negative impact. I would try for anyone always to address first these ones before going into anything that maybe tries to address very specifically stress, things like meditation or deep breathing exercises that try to stimulate parasympathetic activity. All these sort of things do have an impact, at least acutely. So as you do it, we know that there is an impact there. So HRV increases as you practice, but that does not mean that it will have an impact chronically. So your HRV might not then change from yesterday's HRV, even if you keep up these habits. So I think the research seems to show that it's more of an acute effect. But again, there is always in these kind of things, large individual variability. So for some people, it works better than for others. There are people that clearly benefit from doing it in many different ways, including change in resting physiology. And there are people in which you do not see that change.
Yeah. That's good to know that there are a lot of things in our control that we can do in order to improve our HRV and resting heart rate. So nobody can come and say it's only genetics. No, you have a lot of influence in that. And
it's always a combination.
Yeah, which is good to know. And I think that it's good to communicate it to our audience that even if your HRV is not the best, and you can do something about that, which is great. And that's taking me to the next question about overtraining. So what is the effect of overtraining on the HRV?
So I think that when we look at basically chronic negative responses, both in terms of psychological stressors, we think about burnout and think associated to, let's say, a negative chronic response to work stress or any other stressor that we might be feeling, but that's, we can probably beat it as burnout in terms of work and overtraining in terms of training. We have a response that might sometimes even be similar to what you normally would consider the opposite, a positive response. So that is one of the difficulties of interpreting this physiological data, is that in certain situations, acutely and chronically, you have very different responses in good and negative cases. I will make an example to understand this more clearly. If we think about something as simple as resting heart rate and exercise, we said that lower resting heart rate is associated with increased fitness. So typically when we go through an exercise program, we try to see if with increased training or improved fitness, we have a reduced resting heart rate in the long run. But acutely, on a day-to-day basis, if today your heart rate is highly suppressed with respect to yesterday, that is typically a bad sign. It means that your body is very fatigued. And with HRV, it can be the same sometimes. So your HRV might be particularly high, abnormally high today with respect to yesterday. And that typically is not a good sign. It does not mean that you shouldn't really go hard or anything like that, which is sometimes a problem with the interpretation of some of the tools out there. Because in those cases, it probably means that your body is overly parasympathetic, not because you're super recovered, but because it's working really hard to get you back to your normal state after maybe a hard effort. So you have always these differences between the acute short-term response and the longer chronic response. For a chronic response, typically a suppression in HRV and increased heart rate is a negative response that we see with burnout or overtraining. But acutely, this can be very different and in the opposite direction. That's why I always say, okay, you need always to consider these signals in the context of your normal range. You should not interpret the data with this overly simplistic interpretation of higher is better for HRV or lower is better for heart rate, because it does not work like that acutely. And typically when you have those changes on a day-to-day basis, they might signal actually that you are extremely fatigued.
Thank you for the detailed explanation. We discussed the genetic effect on your HRV, and I'm wondering what is it, if you can quantify it for percentage. For example, we know that if you look at food sensitivity and you look at some single nucleotide polymorphism and you build some score, we know that it's less than 10% of the food sensitivity come from genetics. A lot come from the environment. How would you or can you quantify it for HRV?
Yeah, I would say it is much higher in this case, maybe 60% or higher. There are some studies looking at both heart rate and HRV. And also I would say from experience and working with people over many years that also changed their lifestyle dramatically and things like that, you can expect changes, but a lot of it, I think, is genetic in terms of the absolute value, which has also limited value, I would say. For example, I've seen Olympic athletes with low values and high values, and it doesn't mean anything, basically, because they have their different HRVs, and then the data is never compared between people. It's always just looked at relative terms. So it's very difficult to make use of absolute values. It does not mean that you should completely disregard it, because there is always maybe something you can do to improve your lifestyle and behavior, like we discussed before. And there can be changes, and sometimes even dramatic changes, because even if we are increasing your HRV by 50%, it can be an enormous change, right? If your HRV is 60 milliseconds and it becomes 90 milliseconds, then it's extremely different, and it's like you are in a completely different age group, basically based on the conversation we had earlier. So those changes can happen for sure with behavior, depending on, I would say, where you start, right? So if your behavior is not ideal, let's say, then you have more impact based on your behavior to change your HRV and your resting heart rate and your physiology that way. If you already check a lot of boxes, though, so say you're already very healthy, your exercise and your stress is under control and those kind of things, then it could be that that's more or less where you're at with your HRV, regardless of the absolute value. You might have very limited impact on that, and then it's fine. You are still able to use this data effectively as a feedback loop. I think that is when it becomes more useful, is day-to-day assessments of your response to stress so that you can better balance stressors. Also because we often talk about higher HRV in the context of improving HRV, but improving HRV to me does not necessarily mean having a higher HRV. There's another aspect to it, which is simply having a more stable HRV. Because if your HRV is on a day-to-day basis all over the place, because 2 days ago you were extremely stressed and yesterday you were drinking a lot, and all sorts of things that are happening, and your data fluctuates a lot, even though your absolute value is good, it still might not be an ideal state. You want it to be typically more constant, less variable on a day-to-day basis, so that it stays more or less always within what we consider your normal or your normal range, so that you're always in this optimal state and you don't have all these swings. So there are always two sides of it. If you have already implemented all the behavioral change and lifestyle changes, and your HRV has a certain value that has been more or less that over the past months or years even, then working towards stability with other lifestyle changes could be also a good way to improve your response.
Yeah, I think that we got a couple of very good points here. The first one is it's not so important to compare yourself to your peers. It's much more important for you to look at your own N of one data and basically see if it's going higher or lower. And the second one, it's also important to try to find a way that your HRV won't change dramatically between day to day or week to week, but it's better to keep it stable because then it shows that you are in a better condition. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, exactly. We all face stressors, and since we measure HRV at specific times, when our data is more constant, it simply means that we bounce back quickly. It does not mean that we are not facing stressors. You know, stress can be good, sometimes it's essential. So that is really, the point is not to avoid the stressors, but to put yourself in a state in which you bounce back very quickly. If we look at top athletes' HRV over time, their data is pretty much always within this optimal range. You don't have all the swings that other people have, not because they don't go hard. Probably they go much harder than most people, but their body recovers extremely fast, so that when they measure again, they bounce back. So we should try to get, I think, into that state of stability, which is often confused with avoiding stress, but it is not the case. It's just about facing the right stressors, the stressors that you can cope with at a given time. And then those kind of stressors can change over time as also your ability to cope with them improves or changes.
Okay. And is there any wearable that looking into that, basically the day-to-day variability of your HRV?
So that's something we do in the app with HRV for Training. So if you measure in the morning, or if you link a wearable to our app, like an Oura Ring, then we compute this parameter, which is called the coefficient of variation of HRV, which is a quantification of the day-to-day variability. And we look at that in relation to heart rate and HRV and try to detect basically if you are coping well with the current, you know, lifestyle and training and stressors, or if there is a risk of maladaptation or accumulating fatigue or softer issues that can be signaled by a response that is not ideal, for example, high day-to-day changes, or a suppressed HRV and things like that. So we include this also in the software.
Okay, yeah. Sounds like a very important one, and I assume that other wearable will adopt it in the future. I hope so. Yeah. So my next question is about exercise. So exercise is a big combination of a lot of different activity. You have strength, you have endurance, you have high intensity interval training. Which of them is, let's say, better for HRV, and which of them is, say, less better?
Good question. I think here also it might depend on short and long term. Typically, we know that when the exercise dose is stronger, we might have a stronger response in the short term. But that does not mean that that is the ideal setup in the long term or that it is sustainable. So typically, I would say that health-wise, a combination of resistance and strength, and in terms of endurance and strength, sorry, in terms of endurance exercise, then a combination of low-intensity exercise that can also be good for, you know, metabolism and everything that is your response to that kind of low intensity and prolonged stimulus, as well as the higher intensity stimulus that can lead maybe to different cardiovascular adaptations. And all of that might have in turn an effect on your resting physiology and heart rate and HRV.
So low intensity, something like in the popular science, they call it zone 2 exercise. That's what you're referring
to? Exactly. That or lower, anything that is low intensity exercise can be beneficial. And then typically a good sleep combined also with some higher intensity, I think, instead of just neglecting any of the two is probably an idea.
Okay, excellent. Thank you so much. So I know that you, we touch a bit diet, but I want to dive deeper into that. So diet and HLV, can you give us some example of if there is specific a nutrient that are better for HLV and specific diet or nutrient that are not good for HLV?
Yeah, I would keep this very broad because I think it's hardly possible to study it to that level of detail, mostly because HRV is not specific of anything. I think we always need to remember this, that HRV is really sensitive to all sorts of stressors. And of course, diet is something very important. But this sensitivity comes at a cost, which is not being specific of anything in particular. So if our HRV is suppressed, it could be that we are sick. It could be that we are drinking. It could be that we are psychologically stressed. It could be that we exercised. It could be any sort of thing. And we have no idea, basically, where the suppression comes from, unless we know the context very well. That is why I also think it's typically useful for someone to track it, because they know themselves. They know what they did. They know all the context. But it's a lot more difficult to get data, let's say at the population level or in a study or from someone else, where you do not have that detailed context and then try to drive interpretation, derive interpretations from that. In terms of the diet, I think we simply know that at the very broad level, there are diets that might have a positive impact. As we were saying, Mediterranean diet typically is the most widely studied in this context, which seems to be resulting in a more positive physiological profile, let's say. So increased HRV, reduced maybe fasting heart rate. At the same time, we also know that ultra-processed foods have a negative impact, at least when measured acutely, right? So here, there is always, again, the difference between, okay, we try these foods and then we measure HRV before and after. And for some, we see a very negative response. Like we could look at glucose response, right? So we have an ultra processed food and, you know, glucose is spiking and it's a very poor response from the body. And similarly, HRV is going to be synced and the resting heart rate is higher. And then that is prolonged for hours, maybe during digestion. We have all this acute response, but then it is much more difficult to study at the chronic level, right? Because again, then a lot of stressors will have an impact at the same time. And we cannot discriminate what was the impact of diet and what was the impact of maybe not exercising or sleeping poorly and things like that. And your diet will have an impact also on your sleep, and all of that will in turn impact your HRV. So it's all connected in a way that is very difficult to pinpoint what causes issues. But on a broader level, I would say, as we were mentioning earlier, so certain types of food that we all know might be not the best ones had shown to have a negative effect also on these signals. And then on the other hand, certain types of diets, like the Mediterranean diet, has shown positive effect. And yeah, I would say that what we know is mostly limited to this kind of insights at this stage.
Okay, thank you for that. That's a good information. And I'm originated from the Mediterranean, and I think that you are as well. So we are lucky. We like this food. I feel that that's the best. And sounds like it's good also for HLV. So I'm happy about that.
You cannot complain.
Yeah, exactly. But to get into a more serious direction, what about the nutrient timing, specifically if you eat too late or if you are fasting? Is there any effect on the HRV level?
Yeah, there should be, depending on when you measure, especially, I would say. So if your measurements are in the night, then meal timing will have an impact on the measurement more than when you measure in the morning. Because, for example, if you eat very late, regardless of the impact it might have on your sleep, still there is a phase in which you are digesting. Your metabolism is more active, and then, yeah, basically a higher energy expenditure for a period of time, and your heart rate is a bit higher, your HRV is more suppressed. So if you're measuring in that window because you ate very late and then you went to bed, then you might see some form of suppression or all over HRV. If you do that every day, it will look like your HRV is just lower. If you do it only sometimes, then you will be able to see it quite clearly because it will stand out with respect to the other data points. If you measure in the morning, probably you go over this phase, and then you renormalize, so you might not see this type of change. So it depends a bit the measurement timing, but there is certainly an effect, because like any other process in the body, then it is pretty much all regulated by the autonomic nervous system. So when there is a change in the autonomic nervous system, there will be in turn a change in heart rate, and that is what is captured by HRV, and that is why you can see that this kind of variation is also related to meal time.
Okay. What about fasting? So if I'm fasting for a day or two or five, what will be the
effect? Fasting, there might be changes also there. I think this was studied also a few times in the context of Ramadan as well. So let's say short form of fasting that are quite common. And there, I think the literature is also a bit mixed. My take there is that there is very high individual variability, like with many stresses. And so some people might see the opposite responses, but it tends to be, I would say, more consistently seen that you see a reduction maybe in resting heart rate. And then HRV is more complicated because that is more about the stress response. So it could be that it goes in the opposite direction of heart rates and you have the increase, or it could be that you're basically struggling to adapt to this new stimulus, and then you would see a suppression. So probably depending on the individual's ability to respond quickly to that type of stimulus, and also maybe how often they do it or how frequently. Now people fast with different protocols also for other reasons, right? Might allow you to see changes over time the same way when you are exposed to some environmental stressors, like, I don't know, the heat or altitude. It might be that your response changes as you get more used to the stimulus, or over days as you adapt to a single dose of the stimulus. So all of that, I think, is highly individual. That's why it's interesting to look at the data at the individual level, because, yeah, it could be very different between different people.
Excellent. Thank you so much. That was really fascinating to learn so much about HRV and resting heart rate. And we usually like to finish with a question about what will be your best tip for our audience about health span and longevity? What would you recommend them to do?
I would say really stick to the basics of trying to move throughout the day and eat well. And of course, try to watch your stressors and try to manage those in a way that works for you.
Yeah, excellent. That's always good to have. And I think that's always true. Try to stick to your basic and don't manipulate your body too much. That's definitely a good thing to do. So I think that we got to a time that we unfortunately need to finish. I'm sure that we can ask you a lot of other questions, and maybe we'll keep it up for our next time. Hopefully you will agree to come. I want to thank you so much, Dr. Altini. And we look forward to explore the research in the field of longevity each month with you and the leading scientist. And for more information, please go to www.instatracker.com/podcast. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Longevity by Design. Please subscribe to this podcast on Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. Longevity by Design is powered by Inside Tracker, a personalized health optimization platform that helps people improve their lives by improving their bodies from the inside out using personalized, science-backed recommendations for nutrition, supplements, and lifestyle changes. To learn more, visit insidetracker.com/podcasts.